Thank you, Al. Appreciate that. Really great songs today. Wow. Well, we know these words. They're very familiar to us. He sees you when you're sleeping. He knows when you're awake. He knows if you've been bad or good. So be good for goodness sake. You better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. God is watching over us. You know, it feels good to be noticed. It feels good to be seen and to be recognized. I know at work, a lot of the bosses like to say to the people that report to them, they say, I see you. I notice you. I see your work. I see you as a person. I see what you're doing. I see the value that you bring to the institution. That's important for somebody to hear that my boss sees what I do. Kids, of course, love to be watched. I can remember raising kids, three boys, dad, watch, dad, watch. And I know maybe if you're a grandparent or you remember your kid, you know, raising days, you had that same experience. You just always had to be watching. If you just for a second, you were, you know, God forbid, folding laundry or something, they would just be begging for your attention. They want to be watched as they're performing, as they're building whatever they already did. They want you to relive it with them and to watch it. I'm the advisor for the climbing club at Pepperdine. So we do indoor sport climbing. And there's a place in Westlake Village we go to. And of course, they're all 18, 20 years old, and I'm the old guy, and I can't hardly keep up. But one of the fun things about going with the students with climbing is they do this thing called bouldering. So you can climb all the way to the top of this really high wall, and you have a harness, and you have a rope, and you're tied in. But bouldering, you just climb on the wall without any harness or rope. Well, the wall, though, is only about 10 feet high. So if you fall, you just fall right onto a really thick mat. No big deal. Well, what's really cool about the bouldering is the kids these days, the young people that are bouldering, they get together in little groups and they work on a course or a route together. So one person takes a turn and everyone sort of sits on the ground and watches and offers encouragement. You got this, or hey, put your hand over there. And then when that person's done or they fall, the next person goes and everybody watches that person and you kind of see who can get to the top and whatever. So I'm doing this with about four or five different students. And again, it's really hard for me and a lot of them are just doing it and I'm struggling through it. And I get to this place over and over again, I get stuck. And it's, you got to reach way out and you're kind of up against the wall and you got to kind of come over here. And I would keep falling and falling. Every time it was my turn, I'd fall at this spot. Well, it got to be my turn again. And I got to that spot and I got through it and I made it. And I was like, oh, look at me, you know, and I was about halfway up the wall and I thought, okay, what do I got to do now? And it was like a big move to grab it. I didn't make it. And I fell. And I thought, oh, everyone's going to just cheer me on. And this, you know, at least I made it to that one part. And when I fell, I looked over to see the group and they were all watching some other guy. I was like, oh man, wow. I just made it through the hardest part. I'm the old guy. Where's my crowd? Where's my people? And I had to be honest with you. I kind of got my feelings hurt a little bit. I was like, wait, you guys didn't even see that? That was like a big moment for me. And I was kind of disappointed. So I think, you know, it's not only kids, it's not only people at work, but it's just us. We enjoy doing things together. And it's fun when people are seeing what we do. Well, God is watching us also. And when we say God is watching us, it can kind of seem like it's this sort of unsustainable reason to be good. You know, God's watching. It's like that Santa Claus song. You know, God is watching. Santa's watching. Be good. You better be good. And I know kids use this, or parents use this on their kids right around this time of year, right? To kind of get them to, oh, Santa's watching. Santa's watching. And that works like 2 weeks, right? And then it's like, you know, he's not watching in January or something. Well, if we say, you know, God is watching our every move, or we think about God watching it, us, it can sort of come across like God is up there with a clipboard, you know, and he's got a bunch of tallies, and he's kind of peering over. And of course, he's got this sour look on his face, right? Because he's doing a lot of check marks on the naughty side. I don't know about you, but if he's watching me, like, oh, naughty, oh, again. And you can kind of get that image of God that's why he's watching us, to check mark all the bad things that we've done or that we're doing. Well, I brought a couple of fun slides for you today, and I hope we can actually see them and read them. But growing up, our family read the comic Calvin and Hobbes. And do you know Calvin and Hobbes? Is this okay? Good. I'm glad that you know him. So that means you're aware of there it is, it's snowing on Calvin and Hobbes. If you're at home and you can't see that, we can't see it either. So don't worry about it. Oh, they can see it at home. Well, technical difficulties. You know, I gave Darren one job. I was like, Darren, you got one job to do today. It's Calvin and Hobbes. My whole sermon is going to be ruined now. And if you just look up Calvin and Hobbes and snow, Calvin and Hobbes and snowballs, Calvin and Hobbes and Santa Claus, you're just going to see some, I mean, almost theological, the struggle that Calvin has with snow. And he's a young boy, like 6 years old, and he cannot wait to pummel his nemesis, Susie Durkins, with a good hard slush ball. But he knows Santa is watching. And so he's constantly struggling with this strong desire to pummel somebody with a snowball and the fact that he is being monitored by Santa. And it's quite fun. And like I said, Bill Watterson, who drew these, is like a theological man. There's so many of these. It's almost like Romans 8, where Paul is saying, I want to do good. I don't want to throw this snowball, you know, but as I think about it, like, oh, I do the things that I don't want to do. And the good things that I do want to do, those are the things that I don't do. I promise. I think Bill Watterson read Romans 8 when he was writing these particular comics, because Calvin is in such angst over the fact that Santa is watching him. So God is a watcher also. Just like Santa. If you want to look in Revelation chapter 4, you see a very interesting description of God on his throne in verse 6. Revelation 4, verse 6. In front of the throne, there was what looked like a sea of glass, clear as crystal. In the center, around the throne, were four living creatures, and they were covered with eyes in front and in back. The first living creature was like a lion. The second was like an ox. The third had a face like a man. The fourth was like a flying eagle. Each of the four living creatures had six wings and was covered with eyes all around, even under the wings. Now, this is an odd thing to come to our mind. It's an odd picture of God. And to me, these creatures around the throne, they're not like some weird sideshow that we kind of wonder, oh, you know, what does that have to do with God? It's this whole idea in Revelation 4 of God on the throne. It's his majesty. It's his power. It's the light that comes there. And these creatures, in some way, they all represent the most powerful of the animal kingdom, the highest, the strongest, the best. And they also represent the fact that God never sleeps. He never slumbers. He never closes his eyes. Doesn't it feel great to just close your eyes? I don't know what, 2 o'clock in the afternoon? I'm just like, oh, this is great. Just give me a minute. I'm just going to rest my eyes for a minute. He never does that. It says day and night, they never stop proclaiming God's holiness. Okay, so this is a representation that God is ever watchful. He's never taking a break. He's never on hiatus. He never goes on vacation. Oh, yeah, I do. Oh, this is great. Oh, yes. Oh, and we can even read it. No snow, which means I can't pace anyone with the snowball, which means I'm good, which means I get lots of presents. Nothing in life is ever easy, he says, as it starts to snow. He's all happy because he's never going to be tempted. And now, oh, look at this snow. I'm being tested. Look at that grumpy face. Hair just like that. We got this snow, so I'd be tempted to smack Susie with a slush ball and forfeit all my Christmas presents. Susie is the neighbor that he loves to hit. To evaluate my character, my immediate pleasure is being pitted against my future greed. His wise tiger says, poor Susie. And he says, it's not a foregone conclusion. So the tiger knows, like, the future greed versus the immediate pleasure, it's going to be the immediate pleasure every time. All right, and here he is building snowballs. He gets a huge, huge pile, and he says, the day after Christmas is going to be epic. Because Santa, you know, he's got a whole year to make up for it. Only these snowballs will give me immediate and certain pleasure. Refraining from these snowballs in the hope of being rewarded at Christmas is delayed and uncertain pleasure. As usual, goodness hardly puts up a fight. Can you see Romans 8 in these great comments? Is there one more? Yeah, okay. So here's Susie. This is Susie Durkins. He throws a snowball at her, and Susie says, Santa's going to skip your house for that, Calvin. I figure that doesn't really count against me since she's so sanctimonious and I keep missing. Isn't that great? And then lastly, Christmas morning, ha ha ha, acquittal on all charges, complete exoneration, ha ha ha. And the parents, of course, like, what is going on? I don't even know what he's talking about. So on Christmas Day, he feels like he in some way got off for throwing all the snow. Okay, that made this so much better. I'm so happy we got to show those. I get a kick out of those. Oh, wow. The scripture that Lori read to us reminds us that we are blessed. We're happy. We're fortunate because our help is the God of Jacob. There are several reasons that scripture gives why we're so blessed to have God on our side. Psalm 146 has so many action words that God has done on our behalf that makes us in that blessed state. Listen to this. God made everything. He is faithful. He upholds the cause of the oppressed. He provides for the hungry. He sets people free. He gives sight to the blind. He lifts people up. And this goes along with this idea that he's never asleep. He's never not watchful. He's never missing in action. God is active. He's not blind to the injustice that he sees in the world. He lifts up. He loves. He empowers. He strengthens as he reigns. And he's watching so that he can help. He's watching so that he can rescue. He's watching so that he can empower, not to just criticize us or to maybe catch us in the act of throwing a snowball. There's another passage that confirms this idea about God being ever watchful. It's in 2 Chronicles 16, verse 9. And just a little bit of background, if you don't spend a lot of time in Chronicles, which I certainly don't. But 2 Chronicles 16:9, King Asa of Judah had a conflict with his northern neighbor. And to be able to engage in this conflict and to be strong enough for this conflict, he goes out and he makes a treaty with a foreign king. And the prophet comes along and says to him, hey, don't you remember in the past, you used to trust God. You used to follow God's way. But now here in these present days, when you find yourself in trouble, you go out and you partner with a pagan king to feel safe, to feel rescued, to feel secure. What about your commitment to God? And he says in 2 Chronicles 16:9, for the eyes of the Lord range throughout the earth to strengthen those whose hearts are fully committed to him. The prophet comes along and reminds him, God is watching for the people who are committed to him, and he wants to strengthen them, not to smite them, not to smote them. He wants to strengthen and uphold them. He wants to lift them up, but you can't go off and be making these foreign alliances. So God is looking to strengthen those who look to him for their strength, for their wisdom, for their path in life. There's an old song we used to sing. I think I've only sung it a couple times. It's probably in our book. It's called His Eye is on the Sparrow. Have we sung that one in the past? We know that one, His Eye is on the Sparrow. Kind of got my little Jerry Rushford imitation going on here because I looked up the story behind His Eye is on the Sparrow. And here's the little short story behind this particular hymn. Sevilla Martin describes the context out of which this hymn was born. She says, early in the spring of 1905, my husband and I were sojourning in New York, and we contracted a deep friendship for a couple by the name of Mr. and Mrs. Doolittle, true saints of God. Mrs. Doolittle had been bedridden for nigh 20 years. Her husband was an incurable cripple who had to propel himself to and from his business in a wheelchair. Despite their afflictions, they lived happy Christian lives, bringing inspiration and comfort to all who knew them. One day, while we were visiting with the Doolittles, my husband commented on their bright hopefulness and asked them for the secret. And Mrs. Doolittle's response was simple. His eye is on the sparrow, and I know he watches me. And the beauty of that simple expression of boundless faith gripped our hearts and fired the imagination of Dr. Martin and me. And the hymn, His Eye is on the Sparrow, was the outcome of that experience. I love that little story of just a couple who physically, you know, weren't strong, were kind of sickly, and lived anyway a life of faithfulness because they knew God was watching. But again, you don't see this couple thinking, oh man, I better be good because God is watching. But his eye is on the sparrow, the small, the meek, and the lowly. And so I know he watches over me. Of course, that comes from what Jesus says in scripture. And the point of what Jesus was saying was that God especially watches the small things in life. So God is certainly watching all. He sees everything. But there's something about the tiny things. There's something about the meaningless things. There's something about the fringe things and the small things that God especially has his eye on. Jesus said in that passage that five sparrows are sold for 2 pennies. That's what the English says. Well, the penny, the word penny there is equal to 1/16 of a denarius. And we know from Matthew 20, a denarius is about a day's wage. You know, it's that parable of, hey, you work for me today, I'll give you a denarius. Okay. So that's about a day's wage. So the word here that Jesus used for penny is 1/16 of that. So he says you can get 5 sparrows for 2 of those. So it's nothing. It's a pittance. It's a small, teeny little thing, right? And Jesus said, aren't 5 sparrows sold for just 2 little pennies? And even God has his eye on them. He said, God knows when they fall to the ground. Well, of course, a great example of the meek and lowly that we think about, especially during Christmas season, is the mother of Jesus, Mary. Her status as a young, unmarried woman, unattached to a man in a small town, was very near the bottom of the social structure. In Luke chapter 1, verse 46, we know this beautiful song or expression of praise very well. When Mary, you know, after she's visited by the angel and she meets Elizabeth and she is just greeted, you know, by Elizabeth. Says Elizabeth said, the baby in my womb leapt for joy when I saw the mother of my Lord. And Mary responds, my soul glorifies the Lord. My spirit rejoices in God, my Savior, for he has been mindful of the humble state of his servant. From now on, all generations will call me blessed, for the mighty one has done great things for me. Holy is his name. His mercy extends to those who fear him from generation to generation. He has performed great deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, but he has sent the rich away empty. He has helped his servant Israel, remembering to be merciful to Abraham and his descendants forever, just as he promised our ancestors. So Mary, just like we've been talking about, says, hey, God has been mindful of me, the lowly state of his little servant over here, Mary. And she said to the angel Gabriel when he came with this news, hey, let it be to me as you have said. Now, Mary had some questions, didn't she? She actually also inquired of Gabriel, okay, you told me I'm going to be the mother of the Messiah. And she had a question about that. She said, well, how is this going to go down? I'm not married. Now, that's a different question than the question that Zechariah asked the angel when Zechariah got very, very similar news. The angel said to Zechariah, you are going to be a father. And even though you're an old dude, your wife is going to give birth and you're going to name him John. And Zechariah had a different question than Mary. He said, how can I be sure of this? That's different than how is this going to happen? So Mary said, I'm all in. Let it be to me as you have said. Now, how are we going to do this? And Zechariah said, I don't know. How can I, like, you know, I'm not sure this is going to, I don't know. And so the angel Gabriel said to Zechariah, you can't talk, right, until your son is born. And remember, his tongue was loose and he said, yeah, his name is John. I remember what happened. I'm like, we're going to call this John. I see this plan came to be just like I was told. Then he finally goes along with the plan and he gets it. But Mary, the humble servant, obedient servant, said, let it be to me as you have said. And she then rejoices that God has been mindful of her simple, faithful obedience. Now, possibly a better word than mindful, which is what we read in the Bible that I have, the New International Version, is just like we've been talking about today, Mary could have said, God has been watching me. Okay, here's two examples. Luke 9, verse 38, same word in the original language. Luke 9, 38, a man in the crowd called out, teacher, I beg you to look at my son. Come here, Jesus. Come on over here. Come look at my son. That's the same word that Luke says Mary talked about in Luke chapter 1. James chapter 2, verse 3. If you show special attention to the man wearing fine clothes and say, hey, here's a good seat for you, but you say to the poor man, yeah, you go over there. The word show special attention is also the same word in Luke chapter 1. So mindful is okay, but mindful is sort of like, yeah, God kind of remembered me. He was off in his study. You know, he was doing something else. He was busy. And he thought, oh, yeah, who do I got out there that's obedient? Oh, yeah, Mary. I remember Mary, good old Mary. I'm mindful of Mary. But Mary says, God has been watching me. He's been looking out for me. And I've been humble. I've been obedient. And he remembered that. And so he has blessed me with this very special task to be the mother of the Messiah. And after God looks and after God sees, Mary says that he acts. And when God acts, he does things the opposite that we would do. All throughout Luke chapter 1, Mary recounts all the things that God has done that is the exact opposite of the way the world works. She said, when God came to town in my life and he blessed me with this, from now on, the world is upside down. What God is going to do is he's going to send the rich away. They're going to be hungry. He's going to bring down the rulers. But the poor, the humble, he is going to lift up at the beginning of this new era of the Messiah. So when God sees and when God acts, he turns things around. So next time you're tempted to throw a snowball, which you won't be because we don't have that snow. So we don't have the same temptations that Calvin does, but we have the same struggle to do good. When, like Paul says in Romans 8, evil is right there with us. But I hope you're motivated to live a life of goodness because God is watching, but not because he's ready to strike you, to keep your Christmas presents from you, to withhold things from you, but because he cares for you. And he's watching you so that he can see your heart, your obedience, to strengthen you, to lift you up, to bless you. So I encourage you to think about that as we go forward. And so that's for us, you know, personally, God is watching us, but I also want to encourage us, how can we also be like God in terms of where we put our attention in this world? You know, God's eye is on the sparrow. Jesus didn't say God's eye is on the palace, God's eye is on the BMW, God's eye is on the powerful and the wealthy, and he's really watching. That's what those people believe. Well, God is, you're blessed. You've got a lot of flocks. You've got a lot of vineyards. You've got a lot of land. You've got a lot of stuff. God has blessed you. That's what they believed. But Jesus said, no, his eye is on the tiny thing, on the insignificant thing, on the meek and lowly thing. So I encourage us, church, to not only think about God watching us, but how do we turn our gaze and see also what God sees in this world, the small, the insignificant, and the lonely, those that are on the fringe and those that are need our help in our community. And God bless us as we are his hands and his feet.